الحمد لله وكفى والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا سبحان ربك رب العزة أما يصفون والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم One of the interesting statements that's made by those who are seeking knowledge is that knowledge does not give itself to you until you give itself to it. Again, knowledge does not give itself to you until you give yourself to it. And the intention in statements like this, there's several statements that are similar, but they kind of all have a similar theme to them or a central theme to them. The idea is that when you desire something, in order to achieve it, you cannot achieve it until you give your full effort and ability towards that thing. Now, it's very particularly applicable to knowledge of the deen. And that's exactly the context in which this statement that I shared with you at the very, very beginning was made to me by my classmates and on occasion by my teachers, which again, very simply stated, is that knowledge does not give itself to you until you give yourself to it. Again, the principle here is that if a person desires to achieve Islamic knowledge, they cannot be lackadaisical or haphazard about trying to achieve that goal. If they give it 5% of their effort, they can expect to get 5% in return. It's only if a person gives their absolute full effort towards attaining Islamic knowledge that eventually they're going to be able to attain the fruits of that labor. Now, this statement, we can make many different comments on it. So let's start with the most obvious. In the case of Islamic knowledge, for those of you who are trying to gain Islamic knowledge, increase yourself in your understanding of deen, increase yourself in the depth of wisdom concerning this deen, then it should be very clear that that is not a pastime. That is a full-time effort. And by full-time, I don't mean that you have to put, 9-10 hours a day. But what I mean is that your heart has to be absolutely committed. We see that sometimes when we make an effort towards something, we're kind of neither here nor there. You know, the teacher's teaching, but we don't even show up. Or the teacher's teaching, but we don't prepare for class beforehand. Or the teacher's teaching, but we don't give the focus that's due to the topic that we're trying to study. That does not work in Islamic studies. If a person truly wants to gain Islamic knowledge, they have to devote themselves 1,000%. And it's only by devoting oneself 1,000% that the person is going to be able to attain their goal. So that's kind of the first point that I would make about a statement like this, which is the most obvious. The second point that I'll make is that this statement is actually broadly applicable. It's not only applicable to knowledge. And I can tell you that if there's anything that's important in a person's life, if they don't give themselves to it, they should not expect anything in return. For example, if you think or feel that your children are important in your life, then you cannot expect to have an effect or a positive effect upon your children unless you're ready to invest the time and the heart and the energy that goes into developing a relationship with children. You can't just assume that, well, I'm the mom, I'm the dad, and so whatever I scream at you, you're going to do it. And anytime I decide that you need to do A, B, or C, you have to do it because I'm mom and I'm dad. That only lasts a certain period of time, and it doesn't produce long-term effects. If a person truly wants to have an effect on their children and wants to have the ability to be able to guide their children, then it takes a tremendous amount of investment. A person really has to be available. They have to be patient. They have to be fully committed. They have to be involved. You can't expect that just merely by saying I'm a parent, all of a sudden the person becomes quote unquote a parent. It's exactly the case that I just gave for Islamic knowledge. If you don't give yourself to it, it's not going to give itself to you. If we don't give ourselves to our children as true parents, then we can't expect them to surrender back to us. It just doesn't work. You know, it's not a, what do you call it? It's not a paper equation where a person just somehow puts this on paper that I'm your parent, so therefore you must listen to me. So now everything I say is going to occur and I'm not going to have to make any additional investment. It doesn't work that way. If a person truly wants to be able to have an effect upon their children, truly wants to develop children in a true way that will allow their children to thrive on deen, then you can bet that you're going to have to put a tremendous amount of effort. Now, again, that doesn't mean that you sit with the children 24/7 and you're not going to the masjid or taking care of the other responsibilities that the deen places on you. But what it means is that when you are with your children, you're 100% invested. And you're thinking, you have the fikr or the concern. You're thinking about, how am I going to raise this child? How am I going to benefit this child? What more can I do? You're constantly asking this question. Then and only then are we going to be able to get the maximum out of being parents. So I've used, this general statement now to apply to anything. But again, it's not even just parenthood. It applies to everything in life. Look, marriage is the same way. You can't expect that you're going to be able to taste the... We can't expect that we're going to be able to taste the fruits of marriage if we don't want to invest anything in the marriage. Just you live in this... You see this commonly, and I get these emails all the time, so, I see this a little more commonly than the average person. But I can tell you that people somehow have this notion that because a nikah occurs, that automatically all the rules of the Sharia related to a nikah are just going to manifest themselves, as some sort of like a tree that you don't have to water or provide any sunlight with. It doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way. The consequence of the nikah and the beauty that's associated through that sunnah, that arises when a person has fikr, concern, puts in time, invests, makes dua, does the things that are part of the sunnah, exhibits good character. Then and only then is a person going to be able to taste the fruits of what true marriage is. Now you have the same problem. In this day and age, people say, I'm married, this is my right, and this is my right, and this is my right, and this is my right. And the spouse says, and this is my right, and this is my right, and this is my right. That's not a marriage. That's a business transaction. Even in a business transaction, I'll tell you, we sign a business transaction for the masjid, for example, to build a masjid. And when we signed the contract or the business transaction, they made a statement at that time. They said that, these contracts, people just throw them in a drawer. Nobody really worries about the contract. We just throw it in a drawer. Only if there's a conflict does anybody ever read the contract. And that's true. If two people engage in a business transaction, and both are sincere and honest and hardworking and diligent, you never need to look at the contract because each person is trying to give as much as possible in order to be able to attain the goal. So the whole issue of a contract never comes up. The time that the contract comes up is when neither party wants to fulfill their right. When neither party is absolutely fulfilling their right, then people start pulling out the contract and reading every line, reading every word, looking at what was underlined, looking at what was highlighted, looking at who initialed what, where, when. That comes up at the end stage, not at the beginning stage, not in the stage of a thriving relationship. Nowadays, I get these emails, again, or I hear about circumstances or scenarios that people will discuss with me, and it's, this is my right, and isn't this my right, and isn't this my right, and this is my right, and then the other person is saying, but this is my right, this is my right, this is my right. That's not a marriage. That's conflict resolution at its final stage. It's like, you know, basically it's like on life support. That's marriage on life support. If a person wants to receive the benefits of what lies in nikah and in marriage, then they have to give themselves to it. And when they give themselves to it, it will give itself back to them. The benefits don't come from the spouse. The benefits come from the marriage itself. But a person has to give themselves to it. And if they give themselves to it, then it will give itself back to them. Now, then you ask the question, who, raise your hand, who wants to make the investment of the time, energy, effort, dua, it's a good character, etc., that's required for a person to be able to attain the benefits of marriage, then all the hands come down. You know, then you start, when you start really talking about what's involved, then the hands come down. This is the nature of everything in life, by the way. Nothing in life comes without putting in a commitment. Nothing in life comes without putting in a commitment. Sure, Islamic knowledge is the pinnacle of that because it's the pinnacle of life. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala decides something good for someone, He gives them wisdom and knowledge. But in the end, it still requires a commitment. So this kind of half-hearted, well, I want to study, but I'm going to do it my terms. I can only do 20 minutes a week. I sometimes can show up, sometimes I can't. I have other things, and football season, I have to watch football, so I'm not going to be able to come to class, so can we not do class this semester? It's not going anywhere. That's entertainment. That's, you know, this, let me just check the box off that I did this. You know, I show up at home, I don't know what's going on, I don't talk to anybody, I just check the box off, I'm married. I don't know anything that's going on with my kids. You know, they're just sort of in the house and I'm in the house. No one knows what's going on with one another. I'm not invested. I don't know. I don't speak to them. I don't talk to them. I once in a while demand from them whatever I want to demand from them. You know, and I buy them a few things on occasion. Check the box off. I'm a parent. Life doesn't work that way. Well, sure, you can pass, but you're not. We're not going to thrive that way. Unless we, if we desire to achieve the fruits of the things that we feel are important in our lives, then it requires a depth of commitment. And there's no way around that. And I know in this day and age, we like to try to find shortcuts and try to make things easy and everything should be instant and I should just find an app and press a button and it should show up at my door. Life, but these types of things don't work that way. You can't just press a button and you know, all of a sudden your kids are going to respect you like a parent or your kids are going to become who you want them to become. It doesn't work that way. Again, it requires a commitment. Now, that's sort of one angle to this statement. But I'll tell you that when I think about this statement now, I used to hear this statement when I was younger, and I used to understand it, and it was an encouragement, and rightfully so. It was used by my teachers and my classmates, and we would talk with one another, and it was rightfully used at that time in order to encourage us to commit 1,000% to the task at hand, which at that point in our lives was seeking knowledge. But now when I think about that statement, I almost have like another way of looking at it. And that is that, yes, it's true, knowledge does not give itself to you until one gives itself to it. But the reality behind that statement is not that knowledge is giving us anything. And it's important to just pick up on this. The reality behind that statement is not that knowledge is giving us anything. Knowledge doesn't give us anything. The one who gives is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives, and Allah gives when a person commits to what they're trying to achieve. So what does that mean? For example, if I'm in the pursuit of Islamic knowledge, if I want knowledge, if I want to be able to attain the true fruits of knowledge, then I have to do everything in my power and ability in order to attain that knowledge. And if I do that, then and only then will Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant me the fruits of that knowledge. Now, notice that there's an assumption made in the original statement, which is not clearly stated, but unfortunately it's often missed, so it needs to be now clearly stated. You know, the pious predecessors of the past, this was obvious to them, so they didn't need to state it. But the time and age in which we live, we sometimes forget, and so now I'm just bringing in the obvious. which is that knowledge doesn't give anything to us. It's not knowledge that's giving it. It's Allah who's giving that knowledge. And so if I want to be able to achieve knowledge, I have to do everything cognizant that Allah is watching me and knows my deepest intention. And only when I do that which is pleasing to Allah with absolute sincerity will Allah bestow knowledge upon me. Now that changes the paradigm a little bit. Now that, because it changes the paradigm from two perspectives. First of all, you don't need to be in the company of the highest scholar or the Harvard-like institute in order to be able to attain knowledge. Sometimes people think, well, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to go study in, I don't know, Damascus. Maybe nobody would study, or not many people might study there now because of the current circumstances, but let's just say that I use this as an example. So I'm going to begin studying when I can show up in Damascus. It doesn't work that way. Because all we have to do is take advantage of, make the intention and take advantage of every single opportunity that Allah provides. And when Allah provides that opportunity, if we turn 100% towards that opportunity, Allah will turn 1,000% back to us. Meaning we take one step towards Allah, Allah will take 10 towards us. We go walking to Allah, Allah will come running to us. That's the actual full equation. You know, that little piece was missing in the middle. That's the full equation. Now, what does that mean? It means that I don't have to convince anybody that I have done everything that I need to in order to attain knowledge. I don't need to show others that I am doing A, B, and C, because knowledge, and in fact, all that's beneficial, comes from Allah and Allah alone. And all it means is that I need to take maximum advantage of the opportunity that has been provided to me, exhibit the proper adab that's necessary or etiquette that's necessary in order to be able to attain my goals, and Allah will bestow upon me an understanding of deen that is alive and vibrant and will benefit me in this life and the next. And that applies again, the same paradigm applies again, not only to knowledge, but it applies to every circumstance in my life. So for example, in the case of marriage, you know, the whole world wants to blame everybody, blame another person when the marriage isn't working out. It's not the person that needs to be blamed, meaning we don't need to worry about what a particular person is doing. Most people will write me an email, my spouse is like this, my spouse is like that, my spouse is like this, my spouse is like that, so this is why my marriage is miserable. Okay, fine. Acknowledge that maybe it might be difficult to live with person A or person B, and it might be truly the problem. But, you know, it's a two-way street. And in the end, the one who is providing the benefit is Allah. So we don't need to worry about what the other person in the marriage is doing. We need to worry about and ask the simple question, I want the fruits of a happy marriage. I want the fruits of a blessed house. So what do I need to do in order to be able to achieve that? I need to look at what's in my domain, what can I control, turn to Allah, leverage every single thing that's in my ability with sincerity, and through that, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will provide the fruits of a blessed marriage. I can tell you, I get so many emails like this. Somebody writes an email. They say, you know, I want to do X, and I feel X would be a good thing, and here are the reasons that I want to do X, but my spouse totally disagrees. All right, so there's kind of two responses. Response A, you could just knee-jerk and say, well, you need to tell your spouse they need to be quiet and figure it out, right? I mean, that's a possibility. Or point two is to say, don't worry about trying to convince your spouse. Don't worry about trying to convince your spouse. Look at the whole picture from a wide angle and ask yourself the question, is this really what is best for me? And if you come to that conclusion, continue to make istikhara, continue to ask Allah to benefit you, and ask Allah to guide you. And if that is indeed the best thing for you, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will open the doors to the opportunity and will also convince your spouse that they should also be on the same page. And I can tell you that I've been doing this long enough that when that type of attitude exists, it tends to work out for the person in the way that was eventually best for them. So, I mean, there's two ways, right? Again, we can take a war approach where I'm going to fight and scream and argue until I get what I want. And that certainly could get you to a certain point, but eventually the person crashes and burns because the next problem arises and the next problem arises and the next problem arises and they never achieve what they're trying to achieve, which honestly was just peace and happiness. The different tasks that we do in life, they're not end goals, they're means towards peace and happiness and achieving success in this life and the next. So this is the reality of how a person thrives in anything that they apply themselves towards, which is they take a deep step back and refocus their lens and recognize that everything only comes from Allah. Allah is the only one that's in control. That's the reality of everything that exists around us. And I don't know what's best for me. I don't know how to achieve what I'm trying to achieve, but I will take every opportunity that's present before me to try to please Allah and show my desire to Allah. And if I'm successful in that, then Allah will bestow upon me that which is right for me. Just think about this for a minute. The entire universe is completely organized exactly the way Allah deemed it to be. You know, that I think I shared this previously in another talk. There are like 10 constants in physics. 10, I don't remember, 7 or 10 or some number like that. You know, handful. Handful of constants in physics that were you to literally change a decimal point, the entire universe would be in chaos. All of these various complex equations, which essentially define the entire universe around us, everything is exactly the way it should be. Now, how can it be that Allah, who's in control of all, runs everything perfectly, but the only thing that's not where it's supposed to be is your spouse or your teacher or your child or your whoever that's somehow, you know, a thorn in your side? Everything happens only because Allah has written it to happen. No one can ever harm me except that Allah gives permission for them to harm me. And by the way, no one can benefit me except Allah gives permission to benefit me. That's the reality of the universe that we exist in. Now, we lose sight of that. We think that person X is in control. In fact, I can just tell you that when Allah sends a test upon a person or sends a circumstance in which we want A, we want B, we want C, all that really is, it's a big test. Allah is simply testing us to see, do we think that others are in control or Allah is in control? When we eventually come to the conclusion that Allah is in control, everything falls into place. And otherwise, we're constantly challenged to come up with this simple, to get back to this simple conclusion that Allah is the one that guides to all and controls all and determines all and has written all. So this is an essential understanding of every believer, and it is that which allows the believer to be able to thrive and achieve their goal. So yes, we have this simple statement, which is not so simple, but you know, commonly stated, that knowledge does not give yourself to it until you give yourself to it. So let me add the commentary. Allah will not give you knowledge until you give yourself to Allah. That's the full unabridged version. Allah will not give you knowledge or give us knowledge until we give ourselves to Allah. And so what our job in life is not to complain about the circumstance or say, I don't have a teacher or I don't have an opportunity or there's no one that can teach me. It doesn't work that way. Allah is the one that organized everything in the whole universe. If you were supposed to have a teacher, you would have a teacher standing in front of you. The point that we have to recognize is that Allah provides an opportunity, whatever it might be. We exhibit shukr and gratitude to Allah. We exhibit adab or etiquette. We apply ourselves. We are grateful and thankful for whatever Allah provides. And by doing so, Allah opens the next door, and we exhibit the same. And Allah opens the next door, and we exhibit the same. All that matters is the pleasure of Allah. Honestly, you could stand up on the Day of Judgment, and you could be a hafiz of Quran. It's not going to save you unless Allah is pleased with you. And you could stand up on the Day of Judgment, and you could be completely ignorant of almost everything in deen, and as long as Allah was pleased with you, then you're saved. So in the end, what mattered was turning to Allah. And that's the essence of this deen, and we lose sight of this all the time. We have this rigid set of we have this rigid understanding that often is devoid of this whole concept of Allah to begin with. Our goal is the pleasure of Allah. That is the simple goal of life. It is the pleasure of Allah. And we are just seeking to understand what are the things that we can do that will please Him. And what are the things that we can do that will avoid His displeasure. You know, just as a closing statement, you could look at the Quran in many different ways, but I'll just tell you the Quran is really just a description of the greatness, grandeur, magnitude, power, strength, punishment, ability of Allah. The whole Quran is just literally just a story of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His greatness, grandeur, ability, strength, names, etc. Now, in between, there's interspersed these little stories and examples. You know, the story of this prophet, the story of this prophet, the story of this prophet, the story of this circumstance, the story of that circumstance. But constantly we're reminded of Allah's different characteristics His names or His characteristics or His sunnah, etc. So what was the idea? The idea wasn't that we needed to hear the story of a prophet A, a prophet B, a prophet C. The idea was we learn about the people who earned the pleasure of Allah that came before us. We learn about the deeds that we can do to earn the pleasure of Allah. We learn about the displeasure of Allah that afflicted certain people that came before us. And we learn about how we can avoid those things in order to avoid the displeasure of Allah. So in the end, the summary is that it is just the book of Allah, which basically teaches us how to be His servants. And that's really what all of life is. And we lose sight of that so often. We are pursuing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We are pursuing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in everything that we do. And we just need to understand what are the ways by which we can pursue Him. And when we do that, we achieve success in this life and the next. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make us amongst those who are constantly in His remembrance. And may He make us amongst those who are aware of the infinite majesty and the power and the magnificence by which He controls every single vector and sphere around us. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.